Recorded live high atop the Dick Jones Building in beautiful Midtown Portsmouth, Virginia, it's Phantasmo After Dark with your host, Rob Floyd, and co-host, Phyllis Floyd. Tonight's topic, The Beast Within. Well, hey everybody, and welcome back to the old podcast here in the Phantasmo Lounge. Tonight we're talking about that the Grindhouse Drive-In not-so-classic, The Beast Within.
It's a beast for sure.
It's something, all right. It's not that bad, though. We'll get into that in a minute. But hey, there's some upcoming things if you are in the area, and you very well should be, for these upcoming events we've got going on. This coming Friday, August 26th, Phantasmo Cult Cinema Explosion over at the Chesapeake Library on 298 Cedar Road in Chesapeake, Virginia, our double feature cult movie night that we do every other month. And lo and behold, we're actually showing two movies that we've talked about beforehand.
What could it possibly be?
We're showing The Monolith Monsters, which we talked about in the last podcast, and the movie that we are talking about tonight, The Beast Within. If you'd like to see it and come see it for free on the big screen, come on out to that. Or after hearing the podcast, you might not want to see
it. Or maybe you should enjoy it with the rest of us, regardless of if it's wonderful or not.
So there's that. Now, coming up on September 16th over at the Narrow Expanded Cinema in Ghent, Collie Avenue, I'm hosting the Flick It Fridays event that month that the Narrow does, and it's The Fifth Element, if you want to see that on the big screen. And that's cool. A lot of cool things going to be going on, not just the movie. There's going to be door prizes, giveaways, and who knows what else. And coming up October 1st, it's Monster Fest.
Yay, Monster Fest.
Our one-day horror event, convention, whatever you want to call it, that we've been doing here for the past, 13 years? This is Monster Fest the 13th this year.
That's right.
Ooh. And we'll be talking more about that the closer it gets. It's a one-day convention, lots of vendors, about 60 tables of vendors?
Something like that, yeah.
You know, the Cemetery Boys will be playing during the day, throughout the day, and we'll be doing a double feature movie night that night. Indeed. Movies to be announced. On October 14th, it's Flick It Fridays at the Narrow again, and in Return of the Living Dead, I'll be there hosting that with a bunch of surprises. And on October 28th and 29th at the Narrow, earlier in the evening, about 9 o'clock, they'll be doing Rocky Horror both nights before Halloween there, but we're going to be showing the original Halloween on the big screen Friday and Saturday night before Halloween. So if you haven't seen that or you want to see it again on the big screen in a beautiful old theater, yeah, come check it out. And at that same location, can you beat this? On October 30th, the Sunday, the day right before Halloween, we're doing a horror-themed burlesque show. Old-time burlesque, horror-themed acts. It's going to be amazing. You got to come check that out. And there'll be more details of that. Check out the Phantasmo Cult Cinema Explosion Facebook page for info on that, the closer it gets to where you can get tickets online or at the door. So all that out of the way.
Okay. Yeah, you can't tell October's busy for us, can you?
And that's just the stuff that relates to film and movies right now.
Right.
Tonight, we're talking about The Beast Within. Man, you know, you would think, as loaded as this is with character actors, you'd think it'd be a much better movie than this. It's not bad, though. It's just, it's a little disjointed, a little confusing plot-wise.
Yeah, and until they, I don't know, probably three-quarters of the way into the film, and then they start to pull things together. It's not that kind of disjointed where you feel like, okay, it's going to come together. It's going to all make sense. It's, you know, and you're really interested. It's that kind of disjointed where, at least to me, I was kind of frustrated. Like, just make something make sense, please, so that I can keep some interest.
And I was almost the other way. I was watching it going, the stuff that is disjointed didn't bother me because I'm like, well, I'm thinking, well, maybe I missed something. Maybe, you know,
you did it,
and because it's filmed well.
It is.
It's filmed well.
It is.
It's moody. It's atmospheric. It takes place in Mississippi.
It takes place
in the South, and those movies from that era. You know, it came out in 1982, but it really feels more like a 70s drive-in movie.
It does feel
like
a 70s film.
More like something like It's Alive. It has that kind of vibe to it the whole way through. So that kind of keeps you going. And for me, like I said, I was watching it and thinking, okay, maybe I missed something. You know, why is he doing that? I don't know. Well, they'll explain it in a minute. You know, something will happen. Something will come up. And it doesn't.
No,
well, there is a lot of exposition
there
in
it.
and it doesn't go anywhere until right close to the end.
Yeah,
when the judge lays it all out.
I didn't hate this film, but I was very frustrated with it because, unlike you, I didn't feel like I missed anything. I just felt like they weren't giving us. It was a very disjointed story that didn't make any sense.
But
until
luckily,
it got close to the end, and then it kind of pulled together.
Yeah, luckily, we had good actors in it, good character actors that carried it. Yeah. You know, I mean, you're talking, you got Ronnie Cox, Bebe Bish, R.G. Armstrong, L.Q. Jones. You know, I mean, these guys, everybody knows. And then these other guys that show up, these are guys, Don Gordon, Logan Ramsey, John Dennis Logan. These are guys, you don't know their names, but you know their faces. You've seen them in tons of stuff. They were all over TV and movies in the 70s and 80s and all that. So it's filled with familiar. Oh, and Meshach Taylor, Hollywood from Mannequin, and I forget his character's name in Designing Women. He's in it playing a deputy. You know, and it's got all these familiar faces, and they're all decent actors. So it carries it along, even though it's like confusing as to what's going on or why it's going
why
on.
Why it's going
not
on.
What's going on. It's clear what's going on.
Well, you kind of get what's going on. I mean, obviously, you know, people are dying, and it seems to be the same relatives or whatever. So you kind of get what's going on, but you don't know why it's happening, and you don't really know the what that's doing it, even though you know who's doing it. But you don't quite get, you know,
why?
There's a creature.
Yeah.
But you don't know what the creature is.
Yeah.
And in the beginning, I just kind of assumed it was a werewolf, which of course it's not.
No. Well, the basic plot is this couple, it's like in what, 64?
I think so.
Mid 60s. This couple just got married and they're going down the highway in the back roads in Mississippi somewhere, and the car breaks down. More or less.
Well, no. Let's clear that up. The car does not break down. The guy is an idiot. He decides he's missed his turn, and he's going to just pull off, like, make a turn in the middle of the road, off to the shoulder in the woods. Who does that?
Yeah, instead of making, like, a 10-point turn and make... No, he just pulls around and gets stuck in the mud.
What an idiot.
Okay, so he's going to walk back to the gas station however many miles down the road.
Yes.
And leave.
And he's going to leave his new wife in the car. Okay, look, that's not happening. I am not sitting in the car in the middle of nowhere while you walk to the gas station to get help. That's not happening.
Now, little lady, you don't worry your pretty little head. You just sit right here in this car.
Oh, my God.
You just sit right here in this car. Rest. I'm going to go back to that gas station. I'll be back soon.
You know, I know that It's a staple for horror movies to have stupid people in them, but sometimes when stories are driven by plots that make people idiots, I get very frustrated.
Yeah, you do. But to go on,
indeed.
If I may.
I'm sorry, please continue.
He goes walking through into the dark to get the gas station. They have a dog with them, which I didn't remember until she opens the door and lets the dog out.
Yeah. Well, you know, at one point I forgot. I almost said something to you because she was, I can't remember what she was doing. She was looking out the window when he was trying to get the car stuck out of the, you know, was in the mud. He was trying to get it unstuck. And at one point I kept seeing something behind her and I was like, what the heck is in the car with her? Is that a monster? But I think it was just the fur from the dog.
So she lets the dog out. The dog goes out into the woods and she goes walking after him. And then he's barking at something, and then he gets squelched. He squeals like something happened to him.
Yeah.
So she goes and looks for him, and she gets attacked. Well, I think she, I don't know, she runs into a branch and knocks herself out or something, or gets hit. But she's unconscious, and then the monster whatever, you barely see what it is. You can't tell.
It's just kind of like
it's a
creature.
You hear some growling.
Yeah, and there's like a clawed hand, and that's all you
disrobes her for a bit of nudity here, and proceeds to rape her. And then all of a sudden,
you don't really see.
No, you don't.
You just
see
know
it.
It's happening.
You see her upper torso moving. Yeah. You don't see the creature at this point.
Right.
I was going to say it was done very tasteful. It's tasteful as you can shoot a rape scene.
Right. God.
But it wasn't real graphic.
Right.
Is what I'm trying to.
Yeah.
Get
no.
At.
No. It didn't make you uncomfortable.
No.
I actually, when it was happening, I looked at Rob and I said, "Well, it really looks like somebody's just tugging on her legs. It doesn't look like
her. Yeah.
It doesn't look like anyone's, you know,
attacking her.
Right.
So by that time, the pickup truck comes back. The guy finds her, and they take her to the hospital.
Right.
Flash forward 17 years later. A couple are in a hospital again.
Mm-hmm.
They're older now. Their son is in the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
He's sick. The doctor says they don't know what's wrong with him. They're going to have to put him on machines and all this to keep him alive. And something with his pituitary gland is off. You know, it's not genetic because both of you are fine. And then they look at each other and decide they need to go find out about the guy that raped her.
Right.
Because to come find out, well, they assume it was a guy because she didn't see it. They know it was a creature.
Right.
So they get back to the town that it happened to try to find out anything about the person. And so they can find his medical history and see if there was something genetically wrong with him.
Right.
So it might give him a clue to what's wrong with the son.
Yes.
And through a series of shenanigans and small town cover-ups and people not wanting to talk to strangers and things, they don't find anything. Now, during this, their son wakes up in the hospital, or he was, you know, gets dressed and has this compulsion. He's hearing voices.
Yeah, well, you see a dream or something at one point where he sees this old house and he sees a basement that's like a cellar door that's shuttered. And
yeah.
He goes to the door and he talks to the door. I can't really remember what he says.
Yeah.
There's no closed captions for this movie. So I had a really hard time with it for anybody out there who has a hard time, you know, hearing like I do. So I don't know what he said to the door, but he wakes up from the dream.
He said, "Hello, door."
Yeah, right. So he wakes up and he has this compulsion to go find this house. You're such a freak.
I'm sorry. A little tip of the hat to Art Carney there. So he has this compulsion. He gets dressed. He goes, steals a car, and he goes to the. It's the same town that the parents went to. He's compelled to go there. And you see a replay of the dream.
Yes.
And then he wanders around and bumps into this house and is leaning against the wall. And this young girl comes out and finds him. And I guess he passes out.
Oh, well, that's after he kills the one dude.
Does he kill the one guy there?
Yeah, that was the newspaper guy.
Oh, that's right.
Right.
In between there, he stumbles in, and that, you know, we got to talk about that for a second, because that scene, okay, he goes in the talks to the guy in the basement, or talks to himself in the basement, and then he wanders out, and he instinctively knows where to go, or because he's possessed by the spirit knows where to go.
Right.
To get all the people, this family that wronged him.
I would like to point out that at no point do we have a freaking clue that he's possessed by a spirit. Okay. No idea whatsoever.
Well, not yet. You do a little later.
Later, but right now
he tells
we don't
the guy.
Have a clue.
He tells the one guy.
Right. Now, that's what I'm saying. But at this point,
scene,
you're totally confused.
Okay. This scene, newspaper guy's on the phone in a dirty wife beater in his kitchen looking real skeezy, arguing with the lady at the grocery store about the delivery boy hasn't shown up yet and he can't find his stuff. And the delivery boy showed up and dropped the stuff on the porch and left.
Right.
Well,
very convenient for Michael is his name.
Yeah. Michael, the kid here, wanders up there and is standing in front of the door because he's there to kill the guy. And he goes, oh, he knocks on the door, sees a silhouette, whatever. The newspaper guy opens the door and starts, well, go ahead and pick up the groceries, bring him in, boy, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he brings him in. Michael is just kind of, you know.
He never says a word.
Never says a word. His eyes are kind of dark circles and he's sweating a lot. But the newspaper guy's kind of skeezy. And you think this scene's going to go a completely different way.
Yeah.
You're waiting for the guy to. You're waiting for this old guy and his wife to start hitting on the young guy, young kid.
You are.
That's what it seems. And it doesn't. But it has that kind of vibe that makes you uncomfortable watching it. And you think then that's going to prompt him to just kill him. Right then, you know. But the scene goes on for a little while and you're waiting and it doesn't really happen. And then he says something. I think. I can't remember. Anyway, it triggers the kid, and then he looks a little more bestial. His teeth are kind of messed up. He's snarling, and he jumps on the guy and rips his throat out.
Yes. And I would like to point out that for some reason, the dude has opened the hamburger and is, like, going to make a hamburger, and he's, I don't know what he's doing to that hamburger meat. It's nothing I've ever had to do to a hamburger meat.
He poured something in it.
But anyway, so he's messing with his hamburger. So the kid, Michael, you know, is killing him, and he's on the floor, and the whole scene, I'm really not caring about anything that's going on there, but I was more grossed out by the raw hamburger just kind of flailing around on the floor with the kid and between the guy's toes. It was gross. That was more gross to me than seeing the dude die.
Hey, that's no way to treat good hamburger, huh?
Right?
So then, like I say, he goes to the girl's house and she finds him and he goes to the hospital.
Right.
Throughout this, you know, he goes on and the kid gets out of the hospital, gets back in the hospital. He goes the next day to thank the girl for finding him.
Yeah, and saving his life.
Saving his life and, you know, helping him out. And they go for a walk. And you find out that throughout this and a little later, you find out her father's real abusive and protective. And, you know, they're out in the swamp somewhere and end up kissing. And her dog brings back the severed hand that he found while he was digging. And and they call the police out there. And they find like 30-some bodies out there.
I think he said 30, six or something. Yeah, it was
which
a
is
lot.
Weird because I'm like, okay, where did they come from? Why are they there? At this point, you have no clue.
Yeah, you're totally oblivious.
And,
no idea.
And because of something that says later, I'm still wondering why they were there.
Oh, no, I know why they were there. You don't remember? The reason they were actually there, we learned later that the guy who was the undertaker, essentially, the doing the embalming and stuff, he was taking the bodies to, and his name was Lionel, right? When that the guy that
the
was
original
Lionel?
Undertaker.
Right.
Yeah.
And he was taking the bodies from the coffins before they were going
to
get buried.
To feed the guy in the basement.
To feed the guy in the basement. So he was taking the bodies there. So he was just burying the bones and whatnot.
Oh, it was just the bones.
Yeah, it was just the bones.
Oh, okay. Okay, that's what I was
wondering.
Yeah, they
weren't
wondering.
Full bodies. Oh, okay. The guy ate the meat off of it.
Well, that's what I was wondering. I was like, he ate the body. Why was there anything left?
See, it's and now everybody listening to us is just as confused as we were because they don't know what we're talking about, the guy in the basement. Billy, right? Wasn't his name Billy?
Billy Connor was his name. Which you'll find out a little later on and find out that he possessed the kid and all this.
Right. Well, it turned out Billy Connor was the creature dude that Lionel, whoever, the Undertaker, was hiding in the basement. And he's the one that raped and attacked Mom.
Yeah, but what you find out is that they say earlier in the film that this guy Billy ran off with Lionel's wife.
Right.
And turns out what it was is Lionel found them in bed together, killed the wife, chained the guy down in the basement.
Right.
And fed him human corpses just to keep him alive.
Yes.
And slowly over a period of time of years, it transformed, you know, of eating corpses and stuff, you know, and being alone in the basement, he transforms and disfigures and turns into a monster kind of thing. Now, why he turns into a cicada monster?
We have no flipping clue.
Yes. It's a were-cicada.
Human size.
See, that's the thing. That's one of the big confusing parts about the beginning of the movie, or most of the movie, is the kid hears the cicada noise. You know,
right.
They're out in the trees and all, and they make that zzzz, and he starts, you know, hurting his head, and then he kills people. And you're like, what the hell does that have to do with anything? And even this, at the end of the movie, I'm still, what the hell does that have to do with anything?
All I can think is that's the noise that everybody starts hearing when, like, the spirit is taking over his body, I guess.
Yeah,
the
but
spirit
why?
Of Billy.
Why a cicada?
I don't
what does it have
know.
To do with being trapped in the basement and turning into a cicada? We don't know.
The only thing he says that has anything to do with why is he says that he sheds his skin every 17 years like a cicada. And that still, it makes no sense, but that's the only reference to the cicada
why
that you get.
Why he became a cicada. Turned
oh,
into a
no,
cicada.
We
that's
still
what
don't
I'm saying.
Know. There
we don't
is
know.
No clue. No
now,
idea.
The reason, I know the reason the filmmakers chose it, though.
Oh?
Well, kind of, sort of.
Okay. Enlighten me.
Okay. Well, every 17 years, they're using that as kind of a parable or like a metaphor for the kid. He was born, and then 17 years later, and the oncoming of adulthood and the changes that they go through, and how the cicada changes and sheds its skin. He's like shedding childhood, becoming an adult, and the confusing time and the turmoil with that.
Okay, that's still stupid.
It is stupid, but that's why they chose it. Just that's them grasping at something to make some kind of sense.
Grasping is right.
Yeah. But like I said, there's a lot of exposition in this movie, and not much of it is very useful.
Mm-mm.
But the thing about it is, and we're not gonna we've gone point for point for the plot already too much,
yeah.
And we're not gonna tell you that
only because we've been so frustrated with it. Or okay, I have. I don't know that you were nearly as frustrated.
Now, see, and
with
that's
this
the thing. That's what I was. That's what I was getting ready to talk about. It didn't frustrate me. The not knowing didn't frustrate me as much because of a couple things. One, like I said, it was shot very well.
It was.
It had decent actors in it and decent acting. Even
and
the
good
kid.
Music.
Yeah. Oh well, Les Baxter did the music, so the music was fantastic.
Yeah, good music.
You know, even the kid. I think his name was Paul Clemens. Was the actor? Mm-hmm. He did well.
He did.
You know, but a couple things is he wasn't. You didn't really like him.
Yeah. No, I didn't care about him at all.
Yeah, you didn't care about him or anybody else because you didn't see them before stuff started happening.
Yeah, maybe.
You didn't have a point of reference of who they were.
Yeah.
You know, the first time we see him, the kid, is in a hospital bed, and he's sick, and stuff starts happening from that point.
Yeah.
Now, granted, it's pretty cool in the fact that, okay, boom, the movie, from the get-go, boom, we're moving.
I was just getting ready to say that, you know, a lot of times I like to be thrown into the middle of a story without getting all the history. You know, sometimes I want history. I really do. But sometimes I don't need it, you know?
But to have any connection to the character or care about them. You need a point of reference, and you need to know a little bit about who they are, what kind of person they are. And this, you have nothing. Yeah. There's nothing at all. And even about the parents, really. You don't know about how they are, except how they relate to the kid while he's in the hospital, which is they're going to relate different to him that way than they do in normal time.
Right.
You know, so you don't care about any of the protagonists in the movie, which is a big part of its downfall. But,
right.
It is a monster movie. There is a creature, a monster in it.
Yeah.
And when there is a monster, a creature going around kills, you can get away with a lot. You can let a lot go, and especially if it's shot well.
Mm-hmm.
And this movie is it's a perfect drive-in film.
Why?
Okay. Well, think about it, especially for back in the day.
In 82?
Well, back in the 70s and 80s. Well, okay. Drive-ins were starting to fade out into the 80s there.
Yes.
In a big way. But the 70s, they were still going pretty decently. And the grindhouse theaters and all that. And this is a great movie for a drive-in because it's moody. A lot of it takes place at night, a lot of dark scenes.
Mm-hmm.
It's atmospheric. There's points of it that are pretty good, and there's parts that are real slow. Okay? And there's a monster in it. You go to the drive-in with your girl to make out. Okay? Back in the day, especially. Right. Now we go like, we're going to drive and see a movie. Yeah, we're going to see this movie in a drive-in. That's what we're going for. But, you know, it was date night going to the drive-in. So you could be in the car making out. You're not missing anything really in the movie. You stop to take a breath wherever you look up, and there's something going on. And the plot's moving on. So you can kind of half watch it and still enjoy it. You know, and it's a creature, so your girl's going to get scared and want to be held and up against you because the monster stuff happens and the killings start. So it's a perfect movie for a drive-in.
If you say so.
No, it is. It is. It is. And I'll stand by that. I mean, I'm half joking, but I'm totally serious with that. It's got all the elements except a biker gang for a drive-in movie. You've got a little bit of nudity. Very brief, very brief, at right at the beginning and the end. I wouldn't even call it nudity in the film, almost. It's so brief. You've got, you got action, a little action. You got the killings. You know, you got the suspense of what's going on. A lot of dark scenes, the creepy music, and you got a monster. It's a great drive-in film.
There wasn't enough monster for me.
There's not enough
Maybe
monster.
That's the
now,
problem.
Yeah, you don't really see the monster until the end.
Yeah, like the
you
last see 15 the, minutes,
yeah,
right?
A lot of a back, a lot of side, silhouette, maybe the arm. But that change in the hospital was pretty good.
Yeah, I was going to say that. The change there was pretty awesome. I enjoyed watching that.
And it has that special effects kind of like in The Howling with the bubbling skin, the air bladders and stuff.
Right.
And it wasn't Rob Bottin who did it. It was Tom Berman, I think, who worked on like The Goonies, actually. Mm. So it has that kind of change, and where the head expands real big and parts of it expand, then it totally changes shape. And it went on a bit long.
It did.
But up until that point, there wasn't anything like that. So that's your big kind of payoff.
Yeah.
You know, and then it's a chase scene after that,
right,
with the monster going and killing. I don't know if he kills anybody. Yeah, he kills. You got that good decapitation scene.
Yeah, that was the touch.
Which was nice and gory. Yeah. And then he gets the he rapes the other girl, the girl who was going to be kind of the love interest, the girlfriend.
Yeah.
Her car breaks down, and she goes into the
woods. It doesn't break down. She runs into a barricade.
Oh, that's right.
Another completely idiotic moment. She's crying and upset. She's leaving town or whatever because Michael told her to get away from him. And so she's all upset, and she's driving. And there's this barricade, clear as day barricade in the middle of the road. Lights flashing, bright orange, the whole nine yards. And apparently she didn't see it until the last second. So she sees it, she screams, and she runs off the road.
Yeah, and then she goes into the woods, and the monster finds her, and he rapes her. You know, then they kill him, and you're left with, dun-dun-dun, 17 years later, it's going to start again.
Yeah, well, they don't say that, but you just assume it.
Yeah, and it does. It's like one of those 70s movies where, boom, they kill the creature, it's over.
Yeah, all done.
There's nothing after that, and you're just left to wonder, How did they deal with it?
Yeah.
You know, is there going to be another monster?
Yeah, is she pregnant and 17 years later we're going to start all over again? Or is she going to say, wait a minute, this is what happened last time and maybe I should not have this baby?
I ain't going to have no monster babies.
Yeah, I don't know. Monster babies.
all in all, though, it's not a bad movie at all. It's not a great movie, but it's not a bad movie. It's confusing into why, like, why he's hunting down this family.
Yeah, you don't get that, really. I mean, you figure it out, but you don't really understand it.
Yeah. And why he, you know, it's a cicada monster he turns into, not just some kind of beast, creature thing, you know.
Yeah.
Not some mad, deranged man beast. And, you know, it's actually a lot better movie than it has a right to be. The director is a guy named Philip or Philippe Mora. He directed The Howling 2 and 3.
Oh, no. That's not good.
Yeah, and that alone should put you off. But don't let it, because this looks nothing like those two movies. It does not have the same pacing, doesn't have the lighting, not shot the same way. It's a hell of a lot better than either of those two movies.
Well, I will admit that I was very frustrated and ready to turn the film off about halfway through. And we just couldn't decide on what else we would do the podcast on if we did that. So we let it run. And by the end of the movie, I felt better about it. Because once everything came together and, you know, it's over, I didn't have nearly the same animosity for the film that I did have.
Well, I think you were just a little frustrated at the beginning, you know, through the beginning of it. And I wasn't, because it was, like I said, it was shot well and it moved along at a good clip. It just didn't give you enough information as to what was going on. And I was okay with that. Now, if it was bad acting and if it was shot choppy and had choppy editing,
yes,
you know, then I probably would have been, oh, God, this is, you know.
Well, and maybe in case you can't tell, I have been sick for the past week. So perhaps my patience has been a little less.
Poor finish. And so that probably did have a lot to do with your
I was very frustrated.
Yeah, you're in a lack of enjoyment at the beginning. Yeah. Now, on the other hand, though, the writer of the film, the screenplay, was Tom Holland, who wrote Fright Night and Child's Play.
Ah.
You know, the two very successful horror movies.
Indeed.
So, on the one hand, it had something going for it with the writer. On the other hand, the director, it had, you know, between the two, who knows. Now, there was a book, The Beast Within, which I was reading about. And actually, I have the book. I need to read it sometime. I hear the book's pretty good, and it has a lot more in it. And it's a bit different, too.
Well, I had read that they had cut out some pretty important parts that would make things a little less disjointed.
Now, I read something that they cut out some scenes that, would have given you a little more information and stuff, but I also read somewhere that, like, a day's filming was lost.
Oh.
And they just had to, they didn't have time, you know, they weren't on a schedule, they had to keep going.
Wow.
So
I wonder if that would have cleared things up a little earlier in the film.
Yeah, the book, they bought the movie rights to the book before the book was published, just on the title alone.
Really?
Yeah. And I think then they got a synopsis of what the book was going to be about, and then they wrote the screenplay.
Huh.
So I need to read the book to see how it differs.
So they actually wrote the screenplay without having read anything from the book?
I think so, yeah.
So is it completely different?
No, they got...
I mean, I get that they got the synopsis.
Yeah, they got a rundown of what it's going to be about. They just didn't have the details. So I need to read the book to see.
Yes.
You know, see how it differs. Because I did hear the book was quite good.
Okay, well, you read that book and you let me know.
Will do. You know, the town itself, being in the South like that, a small town, is almost a character in the film, too. You know, a lot of, especially the era, the 70s, and I keep using drive-in grindhouse as a description, because that really does give you a description or feeling of these type of movies. You know exactly kind of what I'm talking about if you understand drive-in and grindhouse, what that means. This movie, it wouldn't have worked as well if it took place in New Jersey or in New York, in the big city. You know, it'd be a completely different movie. But being in the Deep South like that, and in this small town, and the way people act and treat things and all, it really
over
adds
the top Southern accents.
Yeah, some of them, you know, some of them, their natural accents, like LQ Jones and R.G. Armstrong. You know, Ronnie Cox was putting on a little bit, and B.B. Bish. But it really adds to the atmosphere. Mm-hmm. The setting really makes the atmosphere, you know, and that comes about in the, I don't know, is it '60s or the '70s? Mainly the '70s, when, because horror films before that, most of them, you know, would take place in Gothic castles. And they shot really creepy places. And this time, and a lot of it was due to budgetary restrictions, but would take place in normal settings. And the events would make those creepy. And then the movie itself would be creepy to whereas it's a cycle. And then later on, just the setting alone had become creepy. Where before, like, you know, a lone country road out in the middle of nowhere. Used to, that was just to be just a pleasant, you know, nice little country road. You know, there's a old farmhouse over there. You know, real pleasant, sunny day, and it's peaceful. But now, after all these movies that use this type of thing, that's a creepy damn setting. You know, you drive by and you see a dirt road going back to a farmhouse out in the middle of nowhere, and you're like, damn, that's creepy. And there's really nothing creepy about it. Just to look at it. It's like, oh, it's an old dilapidated farmhouse, you know, and a country road and a field. But it is. It's creepy because this stuff has been ingrained in our psyche because of these drive-in movies like this.
Is this like a meter for glass half full or glass half empty for a horror fan?
Could be. Could be. Yeah. Could very well be. But there's a lot of settings of places like that because of things, movies like this, that were innocent, peaceful places that are now just creepy as hell because of things like this because it's been done over and over again.
Right.
And like I said, I believe it was because due to budgetary restrictions to start out with, you know, so happy accidents, I guess.
Indeed.
That's this is probably, I guess, going to be a short one too, because there's not a whole lot more to say about this. Oh, there was that one bit I wanted to get in about the foreshadowing.
Oh, right.
Man, and this is something I didn't really even think about when I was watching it, which is what foreshadowing is supposed
to
do.
That's exactly,
you know,
what it's going to do.
But there's a scene that I know everybody out there, there's got to be people out there. Remember this, I forget what it was called. But it's a squishy toy. They always sold them at Spencer's and at novelty shops. And it was just this rubber, like, bulbous toy. And it had a flesh color and had a face on it with, like, red pieces for the ears and the nose and blue eyes for the mouth. You'd squeeze it and all those pieces would pop out. The bulbing eyes and the tongue and the nose would pop out. Well, there's a certain point in the movie before the change happens early in the film, the doctor's sitting there playing with one of those and squeezes it a couple times and the eyes and everything pops out.
Yeah, I think it's while he's discussing the kid's symptoms or whatever with mom and dad.
And then later on, when he goes through, the kid changes in front of everybody. And of course, that's what happens. You know, his eyes bug out and his head starts pulsating. And so you got that. Forced foreshadowing earlier in the film, which was great. It's cheesy, but it's great.
It was pretty funny.
But, you know, they could get away with that because the rest of the film was shot well and done.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't tongue-in-cheek at all.
No, it wasn't. And you're right when you say that it was shot well. The movie, I mean, it did keep moving along. There was action. There was things going on. Things were happening. It's not like I was bored. I was just frustrated.
Well, it was like, well, why are they doing that? Well, what's that going on for? Well, why is that happening?
And I don't mind asking questions in a film. I mean, that's what keeps me intrigued, and that's good storytelling to get you asking questions.
Yeah.
But it just felt like it was going on for so long, and there were so many pieces that didn't make any sense.
Yeah. Well, that's what it was. It felt like there were a couple things that didn't make sense. Not this is going to come out later.
Right.
You know.
Right. I mean, and by the end, I felt satisfied enough. I mean, there were still a few questions or whatever, and of course stupidity never sets well with me in movies, so that was frustrating. But, you know, by the end I was all right with it, and I felt like it wasn't time wasted. I did enjoy most of it.
Good. And so you shall again next Friday.
Indeed.
Oh, yeah, when we show this and Monolith Monsters at Phantasmo Cult Cinema Explosion. And speaking of Phantasmo Cult Cinema Explosion, don't forget to check out the Facebook page for that and the Facebook page for Phantasmo After Dark if you'd like to drop us a line or look at all the pictures from the past podcasts or this one. I'll be putting up pictures from this movie and the trailer at least. Drop us a line there or at the email. It's phantasmoad@gmail.com. Phantasmode, all one word, @gmail.com. Tell us how we're doing. Tell us to shut the hell up. Suggest things for the podcast you'd like to hear us talk about. It'd be lovely to hear from you.
Indeed. Oh, wait, before we go.
Oh, we're not going yet.
Okay, well, we've decided we were going to do one thing before we finish the podcast.
Oh, introduce a new segment on the podcast.
Yes. Are you ready?
That's going to be quick, I can tell you that.
Okay. Well, since in a past podcast on Planet of the Apes, Rob and Clayton, years and years ago, long before there was a 7 Degrees or whatever it's called of Kevin Bacon, Robin Clayton used to say that everything...
The world revolves around Planet of the Apes.
Right.
The world it's proven revolves. Fact.
So because the world revolves around Planet of the Apes, apparently they can tie any film or actor or movie or whatever into Planet of the Apes.
Make myself another salad here.
So, we are doing a new segment called The World Revolves Around Planet of the Apes. And Rob will indeed amuse us with this. So, how does The Beast Within tie into Planet of the Apes?
Okay, hang on. It's going to be quick.
All right.
Okay. R.G. Armstrong.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Was in Lone Wolf McQuade with Chuck Norris.
Okay.
Robert Beltran was in Lone Wolf McQuade with Chuck Norris. Robert Beltran was in Voyager. Right. And as we all know, Star Trek goes immediately to Planet of the Apes because Sarek, Mark Leonard,
mm-hmm.
Spock's father, was Urko in the Planet of the Apes TV series. So if you can get to Star Trek or you can get to Batman, the 66 series, that's a direct link to Planet of the Apes.
Okay. So
that was easy.
All right. So
I could take it longer. I could try somebody else and go longer, but that's quick.
No, that's a good one.
Oh, a quicker. B.B. Besh, yeah. Wrath of Khan.
All right, so if anybody out there wants to join in the game and has a different route to take to get to Planet of the Apes, feel free to add that on the Facebook page or send us an email.
There you go. So that's it for this episode. And like I said, drop us a line, check out the Facebook pages. Hopefully we'll see you at one of these events coming up, the Narrow or at Phantasmo or at Monster Fest. And we'll be back in 2 weeks with another podcast.
Right on.
All right. Thanks for listening. Good night.
Good night.